Hey, all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening today. The drug of the day today is going to be resedronate. But before that, I always want to remind you, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. We've got a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. It's a great study guide, great refresher. If you're taking pharmacology classes, board exams, lots of really hard-hitting stuff. When it comes to preparing for those exams on those top 200 drugs, not to mention a great refresher if you're out in practice too. So go check that out. Simply an email will get you access. Also, we'll get you updates when we've got new podcasts available and other content as well. So that you can do at reallifepharmacology.com. All right, so getting into the drug of the day today, that is resedronate. Brand name of this medication is Actonel. This is a bisphosphonate medication. The primary use I've seen this medication used in practice is for osteoporosis management. Also, probably less commonly, can be used for Paget's disease. Also, in management of prostate cancer when we're using androgen deprivation therapy. So those are the primary uses, but again, going to likely see it most often just for osteoporosis in postmenopausal women. So defining that a little bit, I think it's a good opportunity to talk about T-score and Frax. So first off, an assessment that's going to be made is going to look at T-score. And if we've got patients that are minus 2.5 or lower, so let's say minus 3 or minus 4, for example, those patients are generally going to be indicated for osteoporosis therapy like resedronate. If we've got patients that are between minus 1 and minus 2.5, they land a little bit more in the gray area of whether or not bisphosphonate therapy would be recommended. And that's a situation where we look at what's called Frax scoring, F-R-A-X. And I'm not going to give you the entire rundown on this, but some of the things that I think about that may increase that risk of fracture and may cause that Frax score to go up. Age, so older age, sex, so female. If you've got a history of fracture, obviously that makes sense. Family history of hip fracture, smoking, alcohol use, corticosteroid use, such as prednisone, for example, and rheumatoid arthritis. So those are some of the big things that jump into my mind, that if patients have those or are positive for those, that's going to increase their risk for osteoporosis. And again, within that T-score range of minus 1 to minus 2.5, if they have a lot of those risk factors, that may push us towards initiating therapy versus holding off. Dosing of resedronate is typically going to be 35 milligrams once a week, or at least that's the most common dosing regimen I see in practice. Getting back to the mechanism of action, I didn't want to skip over this because I think it's really important, and I think it definitely is going to come up on pharmacology exams throughout your career if you're in school and or board exams potentially as well. So mechanistically, resedronate and the other bisphosphonates block bone resorption. And that bone resorption happens on account of osteoclasts. So physiology, if you remember osteoclasts and osteoblasts, so osteoblasts are responsible for building bone, basically making those bones bigger and stronger. Osteoclasts with a C are responsible for bone turnover and breaking down bone. So resedronate basically stops or reduces the action of those osteoclasts. So essentially you get less bone breakdown. Getting into administration, this is really, really critical for the oral administration of resedronate. This needs to be given on an empty stomach. It ideally should be given with 6 to 8 ounces of plain water. It can't be other beverages due to binding risks. And it needs to be given 30 minutes before any other food, drink, or medication. Okay? So super, super important patient education points if you're working with a patient who's taking an oral bisphosphonate like risedronate. Make sure if you aren't familiar with the administration process that you look that up. So again, empty stomach, a significant amount of plain water, and avoiding any other food, drink, or medications with taking risedronate. In addition, it is absolutely recommended to remain sitting upright or standing for at least 30 minutes following administration, oral administration of risedronate. Okay, and getting into the adverse effects, the reason for that is that pill can basically be very irritating and cause some issues in the esophagus if it gets stuck. And so that's why we have significant amounts of water, 6 to 8 ounces ideally, with this medication at least. And that'll help keep that pill moving. So we avoid things like esophagitis or potentially even a more severe case where we get an esophageal ulceration. That can happen as well. So again, this medication can definitely stick in that throat, in the esophagus area, and cause significant irritation. Another potential adverse effect, that's definitely one that could come up on exams, or you may see it in practice as well, is hypocalcemia. So where the body can alter its calcium levels is basically by pulling calcium from the bones. And risedronate actually blocks that process of kind of that leaching of calcium from the bones or that bone breakdown. But in doing so, if the body can't compensate, there is the potential that low calcium levels could result. So that is definitely going to be a monitoring parameter, obviously, as we're on this medication. I can't say I've seen a ton of cases of this where it's been really, really severe or anything, but it's definitely something to be aware of and definitely part of the adverse effect profile. And then we've got osteonecrosis of the jaw. Atypical femur fractures have been reported as well. Sticking on osteonecrosis of the jaw, again, both these adverse effects extremely, extremely rare. With the osteonecrosis, there are risk factors that can increase the risk for this essentially breaking down of the jawbone. So oral surgery, alcohol use, corticosteroid use, cancer radiation therapy, larger doses, longer duration. These are all risk factors that can potentially increase the risk of this rare adverse effect. So I think it's important to be aware of that. If you know somebody, this is something I've done in practice when I've come across it a couple times. I knew somebody had reported oral surgery coming up and they're taking a bisphosphonate like risedronate. Making sure that that oral surgeon or dentist or whoever is doing that procedure, making sure they're aware that the patient is on a bisphosphonate, I think is really, really important and really a nice service to them to ensure that they're getting the whole story and to help them prepare for that potential risk and obviously help them manage it if they want to do something different in management or latest evidence says, stopping it for a while can be helpful, for example. We want them to have that opportunity. And so that's definitely a great medication reconciliation thing and great interprofessional collaboration to make sure that everybody's on the same page with that. One other adverse effect I wanted to mention, muscle achiness, headaches have been reported with risedronate. So that's something to look out for as well there. Monitoring parameters, I wanted to mention that briefly. I've alluded to it already. So naturally, we're going to look at bone mineral density, T-score, for example, some of those things. Calcium, so it can cause hypocalcemia. I mentioned that. So we're going to monitor those calcium levels periodically throughout therapy. Vitamin D, that's another level where obviously that plays an important role in the process of bone formation. So definitely don't want our patients to be deficient in vitamin D. Kinetics, this medication does take weeks to months to really begin work and having an effect. And so probably the most common patient population where we really take a good hard look, even if it's indicated, is potentially like your hospice type patients. If you've got somebody that's going to pass away within a month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, by the time resedronate or other bisphosphonates start working and begin reducing the risk of fracture, it's probably not going to be worthwhile in most of those situations to utilize this medication. So that's an important kinetic thing, I think, that you should be aware of, that the onset of action and the time for this medication to start working is significant. Last but not least, with kinetics, I wanted to mention renal function. So this drug is significantly eliminated through the kidney. So naturally, in patients with poor renal function, it's going to be a medication to, at a minimum, monitor and reassess kind of the risk versus benefits. But we may want to avoid it altogether as well. So 30 mils per minute is generally the cutoff that I think about with these bisphosphonates. So if you've got somebody lower than that, you may want to look towards other options. If they're in the range of 15 to 30 mils per minute, you might consider a risk versus benefit, seeing what other options we have. But they're probably more likely to have this medication accumulate and cause issues in that range. So again, kind of a risk-benefit thing if you've got a patient in that 15 to 30 mils per minute. If they're less than 15 mils per minute, maybe end-stage renal disease, it's probably going to be recommended to avoid this medication altogether. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for any pharmacist board certification study materials, go check out meded101.com/store, S-T-R-E. Got a great list of resources there, pharmacotherapy, BCM-TMS, BCACP, geriatrics exam, NAPLEX, lots of good content there. I've been growing this over the last several years. Started producing content for these exams back in 2015. So we've done a lot of nice things, updating on an annual basis and making sure that we've got the best and most relevant content in there to try to help you pass your exam. So again, go check that out, meded101.com/store. If you're a nurse, physician, other healthcare professional, we've got lots of books on different things from polypharmacy to drug interactions, case studies. All those links you can find at meded101.com/store. So go check that out, and obviously your financial support there helps to keep this podcast free and available for all to benefit from. All right, wrapping up with drug interactions. There really aren't a ton of drug interactions with resedronate from a CYP enzyme standpoint. Really nothing to worry about there in general. First and foremost, I got to remind you of the binding interaction. So again, don't give it with other medications. Other medications can easily bind resedronate and ultimately block the absorption and make it not effective. So that is first and foremost. Same thing with food and drink, okay? Just want to reemphasize that. NSAIDs. So GI ulceration is a significant concern with resedronate. Adding NSAIDs on top of that can certainly increase that risk. So that is definitely something that I pay attention to. Kind of a unique one, aminoglycosides have been reported to worsen hypocalcemia. So that may be if you're in the hospital setting, patients getting an aminoglycoside like gentamicin, for example, or outpatient potentially if they're getting that therapy outpatient. There is a small chance that it could exacerbate hypocalcemia. Also, increased nephrotoxicity risk is associated with using bisphosphonate with aminoglycosides as well. And then I want to remind you of some medications that can cause osteoporosis. So medroxyprogesterone, for example, corticosteroids, excessive thyroid intake. So if we, you know, dose thyroid supplements too high for too long, that can start to cause some issues with breaking down that bone and making them more brittle potentially. Plenty of oncology, chemotherapy type medications that can increase the risk of osteoporosis and potentially obviously blunt the effects of risedronate. And then some rare ones, heparin, warfarin, obviously longer term use with those medications can increase that risk. The immunosuppressive cyclosporins, another example there as well. So, but I would say first and foremost, the most common one of the medications that I listed there, corticosteroids. I mean, those are definitely commonly used, and if they're used for longer durations, higher doses, that's going to increase that risk for osteoporosis and potentially kind of counteract what we're trying to do with risedronate. All right, well, I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you found it helpful, beneficial, please do us a huge favor. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes, as well as support the sponsor, Medit101.com/store. Greatly appreciate that. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can track me down on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.